All right, welcome to A Peek Inside the SEC. Allie Peek, TJ Pittenger, Will Thomas, we are here to discuss week one. Guys, we had a little appetizer in week zero. We had a few games on last Saturday. I don't know about you, but it was total couch rot at my house. I didn't care that it was none of my teams. I sat and watched, but the real season is upon us, and we have lots of games starting from Thursday all the way through Labor Day weekend. Scale of 1 to 10, TJ, how excited are you?
Yeah, I mean, pretty excited. You know, like we do that, we talk about this stuff, you know, in the middle of February and there's nothing to talk about. And in May and stuff when spring is over. And so it's finally here. Yeah, week zero was a ton of fun to get to check out some of those games. I mean, the game in Dublin was really ugly, but it ended up being fun, you know, good fourth quarter. So yeah, I mean, this is everything you want as a college football fan, especially with the big matchups, and the SEC's in a ton of them with Texas and Bama and LSU. They play on Thursday night with, I think Missouri plays, and then they go, they play every single day because Baylor plays Auburn on Friday. They've got a Sunday game. I'm glad there's two Sunday games. Like, it sucks that you used to have to wait all day Sunday. Now I can avoid my family during the day on Sunday too, when South Carolina plays, and then a Monday night game. So yeah, this is the best weekend of like, it's all back. It's great. Yeah, I love it.
Will, were you thinking amazing defensive battle on Saturday, or were you thinking you were just watching crappy football, or did it matter because it was back?
It didn't matter at all because I got to turn on ESPN and not see a rerun of Bama Georgia for the 25th time. Like, just having live college football back is what I've been fighting for since the end of the Ohio State Notre Dame game last year. The entire summer, the entire spring, I'm just waiting for that exact day to roll around. And then when it did, I could not stop. I mean, it felt like Christmas when I was four.
It seriously felt like Christmas morning in our house too. I do think that first Saturday, that week zero Saturday, is top 10 day of the year for me. I mean, I know it was just a tiny little taste, but like, oh, we've made it. All those like, you seem happier things I've seen all over social media. Yes. We seem happier because it is back. We have some huge marquee games this week. I want to get into just a few of them. The absolute biggest is Ohio State, Texas. I am pumped for this game. TJ, this is, you know, two playoff hopefuls right here. And two of the most expensive rosters in college football. We've got Arch Manning's. I mean, I know he started a couple games last year and we did see him, but I mean, this is now his team. What storyline stands out to you the most?
I wonder how good of a job Texas has done replacing their weapons, because Arch had a lot of success, and that's not me doubting them because they reload. They don't, you know, they don't rebuild, right? No. So, but I just want to see it in game one against a really good Ohio State team with a really good defensive coordinator in the shoe. I am leery of that. I think Caleb Downs is the best safety in the country. Like, I think they've got so much talent there. And Arch is really good, and his ceiling is incredibly high. And there's a great chance that he's the number one pick either in this year's draft or next year's draft. All of those things are true. But he looked really, really good for two reasons last year outside of his talent. One, there was so much talent around him, and Texas's skill positions were so elite. And there was very little pressure, because you didn't have to go be the guy. Now you've lost a lot of that skill position, so it's more unproven talent. And you're in a situation where you have to be the guy. They can't just go back to Quinn, who you know you're going to get, you know, pretty good play from. Really good college play. So that's the biggest question to me, is how quickly can they replace that talent? Because they don't, like all of these first three matchups we'll mention, you don't get a warm-up, right? When you're playing on the road at Florida State, or you're playing on the road in Death Valley, or you're like, you go play in a hostile environment. And, you know, obviously Ohio State's tougher than you know, maybe Clemson or Florida State is, but still, that you're having to go do it with the lights the brightest. And that's my biggest question for Arch, is can he do it week one, game one, less talent around him? And if so, buckle up, because then the Arch mania goes even crazier. If he has some of those young kind of mistakes, then I think maybe it comes back down to earth a little bit. But that's my biggest question for Texas going into this thing.
Well, I think one of the biggest questions about this is the replacements on Ohio State's coaching staff. You know, we talk about Texas needing to reload, but Ohio State really needed to reload? What do you think we can expect? And is the chemistry already there? Is the system fully in place? Or is this going to be some kind of like on the job training?
I mean, I think at least on the offensive side of the ball for Ohio State, you're elevating Brian Hartline, who is their receivers coach, who literally could not stop bringing in the best receivers in the country. And a bunch of the guys are still there. We obviously know about Jeremiah Smith. They also have Carnell Tate, Brandon Innes. So I think offensively, I'm not too worried about it. Defensively, you know, there's the biggest new for them that I'm worried about is that you lose Jack Sawyer and you lose JTT on the defensive line. Those are two massive producers who are no longer there for the Buckeyes. But on the flip side of that, Texas only returns two starters on their offensive line. And so I'm kind of worried about the new on Texas's OL also, which goes back to what TJ was saying about Arch. There's really a surprising amount of new for both of these teams at key positions. We're so used to these programs always being the perennial best in the country, which is still going to be true, but it's not often that they get to play each other with two new quarterbacks, a bunch of new coaches, a bunch of new guys on both lines. It's going to be really interesting to see how, like, which one of those teams gels best the first, because I think whoever does that will win this game.
TJ, you know, you mentioned your concerns about Arch Manning and developing chemistry with his wide receivers and taking over, but Julian Sain was only named the starting quarterback for Ohio State like a week ago, which if that's the case, that, I mean, granted, obviously teams have been known to sandbag. Maybe they knew who their starter was all along and the reps depicted that, but if we're going to go by what they tell us, which is that it was a quarterback battle up until last week, you've got to think Arch Manning has taken far more reps with the ones than Julian has. And that's not even counting the games that he played in last year, which he played in 9 of them. So how concerned are you with the quarterback position for Ohio State?
Yeah, more, right? So my concern for Texas is more so the, I think that Ohio State has, boy, let's not make the Texas fans mad, but I think I'm double thinking it and I'm still going to say it. I still think Ohio State has better weapons around Saiyan, right? I mean, they got the best player in the country, right? Out at wide receiver. They've got just an incredible embarrassment of riches at that position. Really good running backs. So Ohio State has more proven talent around Julian Saiyan. And I also think that he's been in the system for 2 years too, though he's taken, yes, less number one reps. And I mean, Arch's ceiling is so much higher than Saiyan's. And I would expect him to go out and overperform Saiyan, you know, pound for pound. Having so much familiarity and so much talent coming back for Ohio State on the offensive side of the ball is where I think Saiyan has, if there's an advantage, a little bit of an advantage. And playing at home is a big deal too. I mean, we saw, you know, the shirtless guys of Tennessee running around last year and then, you know, what that avalanche looked like up in Columbus. So yeah, I'm more confident in, you know, Arch the player, even in this matchup, but I like what Saiyan has around him better. I mean, shoot, you could take all of his teammates off and just have Jeremiah Smith on the outside and probably feel pretty good about, you know, the talent that Saiyan gets to throw to. And I think Brian Hartline will be smart enough to call the game in a way that benefits Saiyan, right? Like, I don't think they'll ask him to do, I mean, again, how hard is it to just throw the ball up to Jeremiah and let him go get it? But I do think they'll call the game in a smart way to not, you know, not put him into harm's way a ton.
We talk about all these big names on both offenses, but the defensive depth on both of these rosters is huge, right? Incredibly deep. Could that fuel a low scoring contest? Is that more likely, or are we more likely to see lots of points?
I think we're definitely in store for a pretty boring, slow game. I mean, looking at Texas specifically, I think their front seven is one of the best in the country. You have Colin Simmons on the all coming off the Anthony Hill Jr. at linebacker. And like we said 100 times, Saiyan's a new starter. And going up against a defense that good, even though you are at home in week one, is really, really hard to do. So, and talking about Jeremiah Smith, like last year, this is absolutely no doubt to what he can do. And he thinks he's the best player in the country. Against Texas last year in the playoff game, he had one catch for 3 yards. Like Texas's defense, I think, has the profile and the discipline to really contain the best players in the country, which they did last year. So I think we're in store for a pretty low scoring, slow, kind of boring game. It'll be competitive. It'll be back and forth, but back and forth in the sense where, you know, the defenses are getting sacks. They're stifling runs. It's not really going to be an up and down the field. So, I mean, 21-17, something like that. That's kind of where I think we're going with this one.
Yeah, the over-under is set at 48. It just came out from Circus Sports, right? So that would imply like a 20, and it's a two-point spread. Ohio State a slight favorite. So that would imply 25-23. So maybe slightly higher than what Will's saying. Not that Vegas is perfect, and handicapping game one is obviously the toughest. But yeah, I mean, I can see that. I would be surprised if either team got into the 30s. I think you'd have to have some pretty dynamic, like a, I mean, like last year in this game, you had a pick six to end the thing. And even with that, they only got to 28. So yeah, if you have a kick return for a touchdown or a blocked punt or something that gives you some points, or a pick six or a fumble inside the 10 or something stupid. Like, yeah, but I would be surprised if this got up into the 30s. I think this is a game in the low to mid 20s too.
And this game, TJ already mentioned, is at the Shoe. How big of a factor is that? I know we like to say that it's worth 3 points, home field advantage, but this marquee matchup, week one in the Shoe, you've got to think home field advantage plays a role in this. And for Texas, you know, they play in the SEC. We play big games week in and week out, but I don't really know that Texas's schedule so far in the SEC has given them, I guess, our best venues yet. So is there a chance that rattles Arch at all?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I don't have a great answer here. Yeah, great answer for radio. But I don't know. I think big time players play, you know, in big time moments. I think back to, you know, I won't relate everything to FSU, but I remember thinking back to like Jameis going up and playing in Death Valley in 2013. And, you know, all the talking that week was like, can he handle the crowd? Can he handle the crowd? Can he handle the crowd? And they won that game like 51-14, right? And so, like, and there are other moments like that. You know, Johnny Football winning big games against, you know, like, guys, big-time players play in big-time moments. And sometimes guys even play better on the road just because they get out of the routine. It's not so normal. So I don't know. I like to think that it won't have an impact. I mean, I'm 100% speculating here. And I'm not saying that Arch is going to go light Ohio State up or anything like that. But I tend to think that these guys have been playing in tough, I mean, look where he played, you know, high school football. Like, these guys play in tough environments all the time, right? And is it comparable to the Shoe or, you know, Death Valley or the Swamp or any of these other places? I mean, maybe not. But, man, you know, do they just have a full meltdown? Like, I would think that their mental makeup is strong enough to where it's not going to have a major impact. You know, an impact, yes, but, you know, could there be a couple false starts or things like that? Yeah, that you have to overcome. But I would like to think that Arch is solid enough to where it doesn't make a major impact. Maybe I'm crazy on that, and I'm not trying to say the Shoe isn't in a tough place to play. But at the end of the day, man, it's what happens between the hash marks. So we'll see.
Well, any factors or things that we're not considering in this before I get both of you to tell me your little prediction about what you think happens in this game?
I think the biggest factor, I mean, I also believe in Arch overall long term. The biggest story of this game to me is going to be Texas's running backs. You have CJ Baxter and Quatrevion Weisner back there taking pressure off of Manning to constantly perform, trying to slow down the pass rush at him. I think that's going to be incredibly important. Arch has all the talent in the world. Great. In his DNA is literally being a Heisman caliber quarterback. But I mean, just it's the beginning of the year. It's his first year fully under the, like, in charge of the offense. I haven't seen a lot of humans who can do that. And maybe he's one of those guys who can. But I think the biggest storyline is, can Texas's running backs get through an offensive line that maybe we're not all super high on and just be productive, wear down the Ohio State defense? Can they take pressure off of Arch and that whole passing game and just try and make the game a lot simpler for Texas?
All right, well, who are you going with and why?
I have to go with Ohio State. I think getting over that hump last year of dropping that Michigan game and then running through the playoff, that was big for Ryan Day and that whole team when it comes to these massive environments against, you know, not the other Big Ten teams. So I think I have to go Ohio State. Very close. They're not going to run away with this at all. I think it's going to be, like I said, that low scoring slugfest. I've got Ohio State winning a close one.
TJ?
Yeah, this is probably the SEC game that I'm the least confident in predicting this week. I mean, maybe that's not even maybe that's kind of obvious, but yeah, I'm going to lean Ohio State too, just because it's at home. If this was in Austin, I'd probably go the other way, but yeah, I mean, 24-21 or something like that, like extremely close. I'll give it to home field, and you know, I'll pick the best player in the game with Jeremiah Smith somehow winning this thing. a little more confidence in their offensive line, although Texas's defensive line is maybe the best in the SEC and one of the best in the country. So I don't know, man. It could go either way. I have no confidence, but I'll lean Ohio State.
I really hate agreeing with you guys, and I'm hoping that this doesn't continue throughout the course of this show, but I do. I think this is going to be a close one. I think the nod goes to Ohio State. I don't love that because, as a Gator fan, I would love for Texas to come into Gainesville, in September, undefeated, but I do think Ohio State squeaks this one out. Let's talk about another marquee matchup, maybe not quite as big as Ohio State, Texas, but pretty damn big. That would be Florida State versus Alabama. This is at Doak Campbell. This is exciting because that stadium was just refurbished. There have been pictures being shared online. It looks really good. And I think this is an interesting kind of crossroads for both programs. For Kalen DeBoer, it's year two, and he's still trying to kind of break away from Nick Saban's shadow. I don't know that Alabama fans were really pumped with the outcome last season, which is wild because they were, just barely on the outside looking in, of the playoffs. But the standards are incredibly high in Tuscaloosa. And then for Florida State, they were riding that high going into last season of Norvell and from the year before to just be kind of humiliated all season long. And there's rumors that Norvell was tied to this Alabama job. I just think there's a lot of cool underlying storylines here. And I think Doak Campbell's going to be loud and juiced. TJ, I'm guessing you're going to be there, right?
Yes. Yeah. So I've got so many thoughts on this game, but to answer your question, yes, we'll be there. Get up there sometime Friday. And then the game Saturday at 3:30. So, I mean, it should be a fun one, and hopefully it's competitive throughout. I don't know how much confidence I have in that or not, but we'll be there.
Okay. So, like I said, rocky start for for Kalen DeBoer, rocky by Alabama standards. Florida State looking for a revenge season. What does Florida State have to do to be in this game in the fourth quarter? Well,
so TJ, you can clarify this for me because you'll know more than I do, but I was looking through the depth chart. It seems like they have 8 transfers at the start on offense and maybe like 4 on the offensive line.
And then their 5th starter on the offensive line is Richie Leonard, who you guys are familiar with. Yeah. So really a 5th transfer that only got to play in 4 games last year. Because he got hurt. And I will say he was FSU's best offensive lineman through those 4 games graded out in PFF. So, but yeah, essentially 5 transfers really that have never played together, which is wild to have to take on. I mentioned Texas having a great defensive line. Bama's might be better. So, welcome to the show.
Yeah. So with that in mind, going back to your question, Ali, like what sort of transfer offense do we get from FSU? Do we get 2023 or do we get last year's? Like, it's just how can those guys click and can they be effective? And the other thing I was wondering, if Bama lands like the first punch or two, like if they go score and then force a 3-and-out, is there any degree of FSU where their players and fans just kind of go like, well, here we go again? Like, I wonder about their mental toughness coming off of last year if they immediately get punched in the mouth early on in this one.
I know we have some concerns, obviously, about transfers and it's just such a crapshoot when you have a large portion of your roster come from the portal. I don't know that FSU fans are really sad about the concept of most of them coming from the portal this year, given the product that was put on the field last year. They may want some replacements there, but it takes time for them to kind of, gel and bond. And so week one is a hard time to get a team like Alabama. But I also am concerned about the depth comparison between Florida State and Alabama. I just think that Alabama is deeper at pretty much every position. But is there a position group that you are really confident in, TJ, that Florida State has an edge?
I don't know that they have an edge anywhere over Alabama specifically, right? I mean, listen, I don't think he's going to be in New York or anything. I don't even know if he's a top 5 quarterback in the ACC. which has pretty good quarterback play with Klubnik and some other guys. But I do think that, I mean, pound for pound, I probably like Castellanos a little bit more than Ty Simpson. The problem is that they're never on the field at the same time, right? So I can like Tommy Castellanos a little bit better than Ty Simpson at this point in their careers, but it's Tommy Castellanos against Alabama's DBs or Simpson against Florida State's DBs, which I do really like. I mean, if there's one position group that I do have confidence in, I do think Florida State's secondary is good. And I mean, they've always produced really good defensive backs. They do a really good job. Pastor Tan out of American Heritage has done a phenomenal job. He's put three guys in the NFL already and being here just 2 years. And I think that number will only grow. However, the matchup of Castellanos versus Simpson is not a matchup, right? Like they never see each other on the field at the same time. So I have some confidence in the quarterback position. I have a lot of confidence at the defensive back position, but I mean, pound for pound, no, I don't know. I mean, there may be two or three guys on FSU's roster that would go in and start at Alabama, right? Like that, and that's probably the case at 120 programs across the country, right? Like it is Alabama, right? Like there's only a handful of guys that would start anywhere, like Texas or Ohio State or Georgia, right? Like those are some of the places you might pull that from. So yeah, I mean, Alabama, and that's why Alabama's a 14-point dog or a 14-point favorite in this game, 13.5. I mean, yeah, they're supposed to win this game. They are, you know, at some places a little bit better at every position, and some places they're a lot bit better at every position, right? And so it'll take it probably takes some mistakes by Alabama. It probably takes Florida State playing their best absolute game possible and then keeping it close in the fourth quarter. I mean, you never know what could happen, right? So, I think it's a daunting task. It's a tough task. I mean, I like Florida State's roster a lot more this year than I did last year. I mean, obviously, right? They won two games. But I think, yeah, getting it all to click week one, getting it all to gel week one, I mean, that's a tough ask. Certainly not impossible. Much crazier things have happened in college football. But if you're projecting it out, predicting it out, it's a tough road for Florida State to try and find a win here.
TJ kind of alluded to it, and the easy answer is everything. But if Florida State were to pull this one out, what specifically went right for them?
The weather. I think if we really get this kind of rainy, gross Saturday, with Jan Miller not playing in this game for Alabama,
yeah.
I still like their rush attack with a guy like Richard Young. But if this game is literally disgusting and like people can't catch the ball like we saw in Dublin a bunch this past week, like yeah. If it's a ground and pound game, I love Castellanos running around. Bama's losing their main guy in the running back room. If that slows the game down, lower scoring, less possessions, and I don't mind FSU running the ball around at all, even though Bama's defense is good, like I just said with Castellanos, like that's what would have to go right. And off that weather, do we have an update on Sodgate? Is there going to be a field down there when they play on Saturday?
So this is interesting. So it's called lay and play, right? Like, so apparently, and I don't know who else uses this. Too wrapped up in like the most dumb things. I'm just like, well, both teams have to play on it, right? Like, so who cares? Yeah. But apparently like it doesn't even have to like take hold or whatever. Like it is truly like a lay it out and play. So, but I am interested to see what if it's rainy? What if it's a little nasty? I saw the weather this morning. It's supposed to be really nice, by the way. 84 degrees is the high, but 35% chance of rain at kickoff. So, you know, is weather a factor? How does it impact that new sod? How does that kind of factor into things? Yeah, I mean, I think it'd be great if this turned into a running game, especially with a really mobile Thomas Castellanos and a pretty creative Gus Malzahn. I'm not at all saying he's 2013 Gus Malzahn, but a pretty creative coach kind of calling the plays. I think that benefits FSU a ton and would be really good. Now, how much confidence do I have of Florida State just lining up and running the ball against Bama? I don't know. Have you watched the last 20 years of football? Like, not much. But I do think that if this is a slower, less possession, more time-consuming kind of game, shoot, even if Alabama's possessions are 7 or 8 minutes and they end with a touchdown, that's okay. Limit the possessions. Give yourself a chance late. That's essentially what Georgia Tech did last year to FSU is, man, extend this thing out. Make these drives as long as possible. Limit possessions. Hope the other team makes a mistake or two, and you'll come out on top. Yeah, I mean, that would benefit FSU tremendously.
TJ's got Chief Osceola on the line calling in a rain dance right now. Will, give me your score prediction.
I probably do have to say Bama wins this game by at least 14. I mean, I think my score prediction could honestly vary based on when we wake up on Saturday morning. Let's see how bad that weather really is. But I'll just do this from this lens of it'll be relatively okay. 38-21. That might be roughly where I'm at. I think that Bama will be able to move the ball. That passing game, you know, even into a solid secondary, I'm very high on Ty Simpson. That receiver room speaks for itself. And I do believe that Richard Young at running back is plenty good enough of a replacement for Jam Miller. So I've got Bama moving the ball pretty well. Castellanos is too good to not score a few touchdowns. So yeah, I'll say probably about 38-21 go with Bama.
TJ, what say you?
I really try not to think about score predictions for FSU specifically until I do a preview show on Wednesday. But if I've got to pick one now, yeah, I'll go like 28-17. I'll go a little bit lower scoring than Will. You know, I was thinking earlier in the offseason that this would either be an Alabama blowout or a Florida State win. Like, that's kind of how I was thinking about it, which obviously leaning closer to an Alabama blowout, or Florida State would keep it close and, you know, the Bama folks would just melt down over everything. But yeah, I don't know. 28-17. So maybe Florida State finds a way to cover. Maybe it's close in the fourth quarter and Bama salts it away. But I think too many things have to go right for the Noles to win this.
I am going to agree with you guys again. Damn it. I think Alabama wins this one. And I don't think it's close. Okay. So let's move on to another top 10 matchup happening this weekend. LSU and Clemson. I think this one is interesting for a couple of reasons. One, I think all of a sudden everybody is buying Clemson. Dabo has maybe adapted his transfer portal stance just a tiny bit. Everybody is really high on what they bring to the table. And I think that a lot of media is predicting that they will make the playoffs. I talked to Chris Doering last night and he was like, you know, I love this Clemson team. I think this Clemson team can go far. And LSU has lost 5 straight home openers, which is a crazy streak given how good LSU has been the last 5 years. 2020, they lost to Mississippi State. 2021, they lost to UCLA. 2020, Florida State. TJ, I remember watching that, texting back and forth with you. 2023, lost to Florida State again. And then 2024, they lost to USC. So they get number 4 Clemson. This is an interesting one. 2 Heisman caliber quarterbacks. Is that the position group that you're watching the closest, Will?
The group I'm watching the closest is LSU's offensive line in their battle against Clemson's defensive line, because LSU's replacing 4 or 5 starters on that O-line. And Clemson, with Peter Woods and TJ Parker, those two guys could both be top 10, maybe even top 5 picks in the draft this year. Two of the best D linemen in the country, both on the same unit. They also have Avion Terrell back there in the secondary. This game, the spread isn't that big, and it's supposed to be a big matchup. I could easily see LSU getting totally shut down in this game, which feels wild to say given Nussmeier, how good those receivers are. Caden Durham is back for his sophomore year, but this is not related at all. But go back to that Super Bowl we just watched with the Chiefs and the Eagles. That's a great Kansas City offense. The Eagles wreaked absolute havoc on their offensive line the entire game, and they were dead in the water. I almost think that could be the same thing that we see this weekend with Clemson's D-line versus LSU's offensive line. And that Clemson crowd, they haven't gotten a chance to really have an environment like this in a little bit, because whether it's a high-caliber matchups, whether Clemson's lost 2 games already, it hasn't quite been the same. Like you were talking about, Allie, playoff buzz, national championship buzz, the other Tigers are coming in. Those fans have to prove that they're the real Death Valley. This could be a bit of a long day for LSU, which feels weird to say, but I wouldn't be overly shocked if it's a little bit of a, if they get pushed around a good bit.
Well, it's 10:39 on Monday morning. So if they're not already drinking bourbon in the parking lot, they are late by LSU standards. TJ, do you agree? Do you think that the key factor is protection for Nussmeier, or is there another battle that you have circled?
Yeah. I mean, we talked about this with some of the other matchups, like, or with the last one with Florida State. You know, I think it's a tough ask for LSU, who does a really good job at high school recruiting. Like, I don't want to put them on this quite the same category as Florida State when it comes to the portal, because LSU recruits really well too out of high school. But man, when you think about that offensive line going up against a rebuilt offensive line, having to go up against Clemson. Now, I don't think that's as daunting as Florida State's offensive line having to go up against Bama. So again, I'm not putting in the same category, but it's the same idea, right? Can they gel immediately against one of the, it's Clemson or Miami with the best defensive lines in the ACC. And I understand, it's the ACC versus the, no, those are SEC type defensive line. Like, they're both really good. And you know, of the eight starters, like six or seven of them are going to play in the NFL between Clemson and Miami. Like, those are great, great lines. And so week one, and we've seen LSU struggle here. So I'm almost inclined to think that they finally break that streak, but man, having to go do it on the road against Clemson, against who I think is quarterback one in the entire country. I mean, that is a very tough ask. And I think it'll be competitive. I think it'll be close, but I'm kind of with Will. It would not shock me at all if we look up and Clemson has a 10-point lead in the fourth quarter. And then it comes down to, does LSU kind of get back into it with a score, or does Clemson salt it away and go up 13 or 17, right? So, anything could happen. LSU's incredibly talented. They've got, even their transfer guys are very, very talented. But how quickly does it gel against a team that, Clemson underperformed last year. Let's call it what it is. They got in the playoff. They were somewhat competitive against Texas. I get it. But they underperformed. And I think going 0-2 against, 0-3, I guess, to play in Texas. They went 0-3 against the SEC last year. And I think Dabo has beat that into their head. And if there's one thing he does really well, it's motivate guys to get out and get going. That place will be, to me, that's the game that I'm most intrigued by this weekend, more than even My Noles or Texas, Ohio State or whatever. Like, that's the game that I think I want to see more than anything. And I love Clemson in this matchup.
You know, we talked, when we talked Texas, Ohio State, we talked about how we think it's going to be a close defensive battle. But in this game, both quarterbacks thrive in shootouts and both have the weapons to have just explosive plays through the air. Do we think that if this game is close, it is also a shootout? I think if Clemson runs away with it, obviously, that's a different, that means LSU didn't get things going and it means the O-line didn't do their job. But do you think that there's a chance this turns into a high scoring shootout? And is that more likely than a defensive slugfest?
I definitely would lean shootout over slugfest, just because even if, I could be right in saying that Clemson slows down LSU, LSU probably still scores 24, 28 points. Like, that's just how good their offense is. So slowing them down is almost a relative term. But I also totally think that Clemson can be an elite offensive team, because if you go back to their teams where they were winning national championships, they had absolute elite wide receiver play that we haven't necessarily seen the past few years. I think they're back to that this year with Antonio Williams coming back. You have Bryant Wesco and TJ Moore who are back for their sophomore years. That receiver room is probably one of the only ones in the country that I would even stack next to LSU's. Like, this might be the two of the top three or four best receiver rooms in the country on the same field on Saturday. So I would definitely say shootout is more likely than a defensive slugfest. But kind of like you said, I think the way this game will end up going is Clemson gets one more stop or two more stops and wins the game at maybe 10 or 13 points.
Okay, so that's your prediction.
Yeah, I almost have a hard time giving you an exact score, but I got no problem saying Clemson by 10. If I had to give you a score, I might say 38-28, something like that. Which actually would be way over that total. Maybe that's a little too high, but something just in that world.
All right, TJ, what about you? What's your prediction?
Yeah, over under 58 for this one per Circa Sports. Clemson's I've seen that has actually gone up to Clemson being a 4-point favorite now. It's been like 2.5, 3 for most of the offseason. I kind of like Clemson by 10 too. Hate to agree with Will, but I don't hate to agree with Will. I like Will.
Thank you.
But, yeah, something like that. I mean, I don't know, 31-21, 31-17, somewhere in that. I don't have a specific score for this one because I could very easily see this going the other way. I mean, being an LSU win, eventually the law of averages says that they're going to have to win one of these week one games. And, maybe it's next year when these two teams match up in the other Death Valley. But I like Clemson in this one. I just have a little more confidence with them playing at home, playing with Cade Klubnik at QB. I mean, what we didn't talk about is, last year, like Nussmeier, and I think Florida's defense really came on late, but Lesmeyer had some like just absolute crab show games last year. Like, you think about them playing the Tide in Baton Rouge. I mean, they got absolutely mollywopped that game before they went to the Swamp. And you know, I think they lost 42-17 or something. You know, what if now obviously the same could be said for both, but like we haven't seen Cade just go out and be awful. Like even when the games Clemson has lost, Cade's played fairly well. What if Nussmeier has like one of those bad games, right? And like he did against Florida, like he did against Alabama last year. So this could go really sideways really fast for LSU. I've got a little more confidence that Clemson doesn't just have an awful, awful performance. I don't know. All that to say, yeah, 33 to 24 or something. I don't know. Just come up with a weird score so it's not always neat.
Well, TJ actually wins this episode for figuring out a way to say mollywopped in it. So congratulations to you. Your prize is in the mail. I actually am going to be the contrarian. I'm going to say that LSU pulls out a squeaker. I think it's 3 points or less. I think it's kind of who has the ball less or who has the ball at the end or who makes one less mistake. I might be the most excited for this game because I do think we're going to see absolutely the most offense. And I do, I think LSU uses the transfer portal incredibly effectively. Clemson, it's kind of TBD to see if this new change in philosophy is beneficial to them or not. They do return 80% of their offensive production though, which definitely helps. But I'm going to be the contrarian. I'm going to say LSU in a nail biter. Okay, so this week is exciting though, because we also have games on days other than Saturday. We've got, and Sunday, we've got a Friday night game between Auburn and Baylor. This is kind of a cool matchup, national spotlight between two programs that I think are kind of seeking validation at the moment. Lots of storylines in this one as well. I think Auburn has kind of been a dumpster fire the last couple of years, but they're hoping with Jackson Arnold that they're gonna stabilize the offense, stabilize the quarterback position, and just kind of be able to utilize a pretty talented wide receiver group. Well, what do you expect out of Auburn's offense, you know, this game, but also this season?
This season, I expect a lot. This game, I wouldn't be overly shocked if they're just a little bit slower, right? Because of so many new pieces. You're bringing in Eric Singleton, our receiver, who's got to get used to Arnold. Obviously, Cam Coleman also has to get used to Arnold. And they have two transfer offensive tackles in Xavier Chaplin and Mason Murphy who need to gel and get used to the system. But the good news for them on that front is that Baylor doesn't really profile as a team that I think is going to get a lot of pressure on opposing quarterbacks. They return a lot of their offensive production, 77% of it actually, of what was one of the better units in the Big 12. But in terms of Auburn's offense, I think it'll take them a little bit, especially this game being on the road, to really fully click into gear. But that offense is just way too talented to ever really fully be stifled, especially against a defense that I think is just going to be fine in Baylor's. So I think Auburn's going to have a decent time moving the ball around in this one.
TJ, home field advantage, Waco. It's going to be a loud, energized crowd on a Friday night. Something that, you know, Auburn is used to, obviously playing in the Southeastern Conference, but could fans create a difficult atmosphere in Arnold's first start in SEC colors anyway, and that plays a role in this?
Yeah, again, home field, we talked about it a little bit in the Ohio State game. I don't think it won't be anything he's seen because, you know, being in Oklahoma last year, like he's been in some of this stuff. Like he's, I don't think it'll be as intense as some of the other places that he's played before. I think it's more about, I really like a lot of the talent and the pieces that Baylor has. Now, I struggle to know if their offensive line and their trenches can hold up, but I mean, skill player, I think Baylor has such an advantage at the QB position here. I think Sawyer Robertson, I mean, you say all you want about the Big 12 and obviously compare it to the SEC or Big 10. Yeah, it's not on the same level. Big 12 quarterback play this year it might be the best in the country. And I think Sawyer Robinson is probably the best of them. I think he's got a great chance if Baylor can win enough games to maybe get an invite to New York. I think he could have just a phenomenal year. And I like their running backs, I like their wide receivers. I mean, they finished last year on a 6-game winning streak. I think they lost one home game last season, and that one home game was to BYU, who until the last couple of weeks of the season had one loss all year to another playoff team in SMU. So, or no, they beat SMU. I'm sorry. So yeah, I think that, I don't know how much home field will matter in this. Obviously, you'd rather play here than have to go to the Plains if you're Baylor. But I just really like Sawyer Robertson. I really like Baylor's weapons. And I don't know. I love Auburn's. I love Cam Coleman. I love some of the stuff they've got there. I'm not a Jackson Arnold believer at all. I think that, and again, it's the same thing as Castellanos and Simpson. They're never on the field at the same time. But man, I don't know that I buy into the Jackson Arnold hype. I think that that's kind of was a desperation move by Auburn. Maybe I'll be proven wrong there. But when you look at the quarterback matchup in this, I really like Robertson. I don't like Arnold at all.
Well, let's talk a little bit about this coaching chess match. Hugh Freeze is known for offensive scheming. Dave Aranda is a defensive mind. Who do you give the advantage there?
I think I'd have to give the advantage to Aranda just because of all that new for Auburn's offense, right? Like, I don't think he's necessarily going to be able to light Arnold up with the pass rush, but I mean, he's a smart enough guy. There's a reason he has the job that he does. I think he's going to scheme it pretty well to really limit Auburn, especially as they continue to gel with this brand new unit. And just super quick, going back to what TJ was talking about with Sawyer Robertson, I agree with him entirely on that front, which is why one of my notes is that Keldrick Falk and Malik Blockton have got to play great for Auburn on that defensive front, because Robertson is an absolute game wrecker and Auburn's secondary is young. So really the matchup of the game might be Auburn's pass rushers and D linemen versus Baylor's. Because if they can wreak havoc on Sawyer, not give him time to be the elite playmaker that he is, that could change the game by 7 points.
Yeah.
So I think that's the big matchup of the game.
Okay, so TJ, who needs this game more? I know, Hugh Freeze is in the middle of a rebuild. There's a lot of doubters. It's been a roller coaster for him. Baylor, obviously a win against an SEC opponent would validate what they're doing, kind of give them some program credibility. Who needs this win more?
I think it's Auburn. I don't think that, I mean, yes, it would be great for Big 12 fans if they could get an SEC win in this, and there'd be a lot of smack talk. And yeah, if Baylor was to win this one, you look at the rest of their schedule and say, like, well, man, how many other teams do you play with the amount of talent that Auburn has? Although, again, I like quarterback play in the Big 12 way more than I like at Auburn. So it's not like, you beat Auburn, you're going undefeated. But I think it's you look at Auburn's schedule, and obviously they got to play Georgia, they got to play Bama, they got a lot of tough, they got to play Oklahoma again with their rebuilt team. Like, if you can't beat Baylor in week one as a slight favorite, I know it's on the road, but they are a 3-point favorite. They do have more talent overall, even if they're maybe lacking at the quarterback position team on team. Hugh Freeze isn't getting fired over this game. But if you lose this one, you're starting to look at the rest of the schedule and saying, all right, where are we picking up wins? I think they got to play A&M again this year. Like, this is a very tough schedule. And I think he needs to be better than 6-6 if he wants to keep his job. And so you lose this one and you're starting to look at the rest of the schedule and say, all right, where are we finding our 6 wins from? Baylor could lose this game and still, I don't think anybody's running the Big 12 with how competitive that league is. But I think Baylor could lose this game and just pick right back up where they left off, right? And so, yeah, Auburn needs this way more, in my opinion.
All right, TJ, give me your prediction.
I think as bad as Auburn needs this game, I don't have confidence that they're going to get it done. I like Baylor to win a close one, because I do think Will's spot on with the fact that, they've got a couple of they've got a couple of NFL draft picks on that defensive line that are going to be really, really good. And I think what you see a lot of the times in these matchups is that, the trenches mean so much. I think Auburn's defensive line and defense will kind of stifle Baylor at times and keep this more competitive. If you gave Baylor an SEC, just middle of the road offensive line, I think they could win this thing going away. Because they don't have that, I do think that Auburn keeps this extremely close, but I do like Baylor, through the course of the game as it goes along to make more plays, especially at home. So give me Auburn dropping this one, I don't know, by 3, 27-24 or something.
All right, Will, what about you?
I'm going to take Auburn to take this one, maybe 31-27 about that. I also have my questions about Jackson Arnold. But if you look at last year with Oklahoma, that whole thing was a train wreck. Everybody was injured. Nothing was going right. It was a confidence thing, it seems like. And obviously, 5-stars have busted in the past. But he was a 5-star for a reason. And I think getting to a new place, getting coached by now an offensive coach rather than Venables, with all these receivers around him, I think this is going to be a much better year for Arnold, even if maybe he's not at his full peak in week one. But regardless, I do think that Auburn, this is going to be a battle because of what we talked about with, the coaching battles, all the matchups and everything. So I got Auburn 31-27. It'll be close. I wouldn't be overly shocked if Baylor wins the game by that same score, but I am a little more confident in Auburn, I think.
Oh, I really hate agreeing with TJ. I have Baylor in this one. I do also think it's close, but I think their continuity and experience is going to be a difference here. And then, you know, throw it in at home. Okay. So Sunday in Atlanta, South Carolina, Virginia Tech. This is a fun neutral site game. Two opponents who, you know, there's a lot that is very, I think, familiar with them, with each other. And I think that they kind of are very similar spots. So what do we like about this? What matchups are you paying attention to, TJ?
I think it's how well South Carolina's defensive line. We talked about this in an earlier episode where Will brought this up. So I'm stealing for him. So thanks for coming to me first, because he probably was going to say this. But yeah, I think it's South Carolina's defensive line. We talked about Dylan Stewart, but they've got so much talent that they're replacing there on that side of the ball. I would expect them to look pretty good against Virginia Tech's offensive line. I think Brent Pry is a little bit on the hot seat right now. I mean, not a little bit. I think he's squarely on the hot seat. And this would be a massive win for them if they could get it over a team that finished just outside of the playoff. But I think it's, can they protect Kyren Drones enough, who is dynamic and who can run the ball effectively? I don't think he's the greatest passer in the ACC or anything like that. But I think anytime you have a mobile quarterback, it's accounting for that. Can Virginia Tech's offensive line protect him enough to give him enough time to make some plays, to beat them, right? And I mean, I don't have a lot of confidence that they can, but if they can, that's what will keep Virginia Tech in this game longer than they maybe should hang around.
Well, I know you are high on Lenora Sellers. I am as well. Dual threat weapon. He's kind of looking to take that next step in consistency. And I hear what TJ's saying, and I agree that South Carolina is expected to win up front. They have superior size and depth. But what are you looking to see out of Sellers that shows you he's made that next step? He's earned all of this preseason hype.
I'm really looking to see if all the reports coming out of camp are true, or if it's just their coaches, you know, saying, look at how great our quarterback is. Is everyone saying that he's just way more confident? He's way more vocal. He's way more in command. He's got a lot more touch on some of his downfield passing. So just those kind of little things that obviously as a young player you might struggle with. If he takes that next step in those elements, I think we'll see it pretty early, because I cannot get enough of South Carolina's offense, at least on paper. Nick Harbor, one of the best athletes in the world, I think this is the year he translates from just a great athlete at receiver to a great receiver. And Roswell Faison, the transfer running back, we still have no idea if he's eligible or not. But this is a guy who's coming in. He ran for over 1,000 yards last year. If he's eligible, that's a whole nother element of this offense that is unlocked. So I think with Sellers, he has so many options. It's not even like he has to do everything himself, but he could. But I mean, passing and running the ball, the Carolina offense can do all of that. And I'm just really excited to see how that unit clicks.
TJ, do you think South Carolina develops, I want to say, more of a consistent offensive identity? I feel like last year there was a lot of boom or bust plays.
Yeah.
And I don't know about you, but I am looking for exactly what Will was just alluding to, a more sustained offense using these weapons. He mentioned Harbor, Olympic level speed, capable of those giant boom or bust plays, but you know, wanting to look for some consistency out of them. What do you think South Carolina's offensive identity is this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think Will kind of hit on the nail on the head with when he talked about just them not being as one dimensional. Now, last year, they had Rocketson. They had other things, but it just seemed like, you know, they got into these funks. I mean, they won that game 17-14 against Clemson, but I think they had 10 points until there were like 5 minutes to go when they scored the go-ahead touchdown. Now, Clemson's got a good defense. Don't get me wrong. We raved about it, you know, in the LSU-Clemson preview. Same thing with Alabama. I mean, they were virtually shut out of the first half and then made the big comeback late, but they would just go through these funks of just not being able to score. And then in other games, I mean, they absolutely scored every time they had the ball against A&M, every time they had the ball against Oklahoma on the road against a really good Oklahoma defense. So yeah, I mean, I would like to see more consistency and just, you know, I have a lot of confidence in Beamer. And I guess this is kind of a quasi Beamer Bowl, even though Frank is not still there, but I do think that
it's a Beamer Bowl.
Say what?
It is a Beamer Bowl.
Yeah. I mean, and even Shane like grew up around there and he was talking about that a little bit on the SEC documentary. But I think, you know, all that said, like, yeah, just more consistency, right? Like you can't have these big, you know, these three quarter swaths of games where you basically don't do anything on offense. You put the whole game on Sellers' back and say, hey, good luck. And I think that will be the case, especially against a Virginia Tech team that I'm not incredibly high on. I'm not saying that Virginia Tech couldn't find a way to get this done if South Carolina kind of goes through one of those games again where they're stagnant for two and a half quarters, three quarters. But I do think that consistency is really important for South Carolina. And I think they'll be better with it this year.
Well, if Virginia Tech pulls it out, it's because what went right?
They found a way to contain Sellers. I mean, because obviously I have confidence in him throwing the ball, but really what makes him so dangerous is the fact that, yeah, you can cover me. I'll also run for 65 yards out of shotgun because I can. And just that sort of game-wrecking ability, we saw it in that LSU game last year, the Carolina play. We saw it in the Clemson game like TJ brought up. If they're able to contain his explosiveness on the ground, I like Carolina's passing game, but I don't think it's as strong as their running game, at least not yet. So if Sellers is limited on the ground, I think at this point we can assume that Razzle Faison won't play. Maybe, I don't know anything. NCAA is a nightmare. But if they can contain Sellers on the ground, make Carolina a little more one-dimensional, I think that's how they stay in the game.
All right, TJ, ESPN's FBI has South Carolina with a 70.9% chance of winning. You think that's accurate? And what's your prediction?
Yeah, I think that sounds right. Right, you play 10 times, they probably win 6 or 7 of them. So I think that's fairly accurate. Maybe, yeah, 7's probably pretty good there. I think Carolina wins this by like 10 or more. I could see it getting out of hand too. Again, I don't have a ton of confidence in Virginia Tech, but I could see this starting out a little slower, right? Where you are kind of conservative on both sides, let the other team make the mistake. Maybe that lets Virginia Tech hang around for a little bit longer, but yeah, I don't know. 27-17 South Carolina. I wouldn't be shocked because weird things happen in some of these matchups to start the year, but I really don't have a lot of confidence in Virginia Tech up front to be able to protect drones enough. I think South Carolina wins this somewhat comfortably.
All right. Well, what about you?
Yeah, I've got the same read and the over-under is 50.5. I think they cover that going easily. Cause I mean, I think Carolina scores 35 or something in this game. And we talked about Kyren Drones. He's explosive enough where Tech's going to get theirs. So I think there'll be a lot of points scored in this one. And I think that Carolina is going to be able to win it by, two or three scores. I got Gamecocks in this one pretty comfortably.
All right. So next week when we pick our games, let's try and pick more controversial things so that we can all argue more. I also have South Carolina in this one. All right. The last game we're going to preview this week is Tennessee and Syracuse. This is another neutral site game in Atlanta. This one's taking place on Saturday. Tennessee is a 13.5 point favorite. This is going to be a test for both of these teams. Tennessee really in a rebuild, right? Lost their quarterback, Nico, headed west, brought a new one in. Syracuse wanting to show what they can do against an established SEC power. TJ, what storylines are you watching on this?
I mean, it's got to be the QB play for both teams, right? And there's a ton otherwise. Like, Tennessee is the better team overall here. That's why they're a 2-touchdown favorite. But, Steve Angeli coming over from Notre Dame, I mean, everybody remembers his one drive or a couple of drives there at the end of the first half, I believe, of the Notre Dame-Penn State game where he kind of kept him in it, had a really nice drive. He goes to Syracuse, who did a great job last year with Kyle McCord coming over. And I like Fran Brown a lot. I just think they lost so much that it's going to be a tough year for Syracuse. Again, I know they won 10 games last year, but I mean, their over-under this year is like 6. And they certainly have to get off to a quick start against, again, maybe one of the more talented teams they play. However, the great equalizer is quarterback play. And if, Joey Aguilar, which I know Tennessee didn't get like elite quarterback play out of Nico last year, but this is like game one in a big time environment against a defensive coach. I could see him struggling in week one. Now, I still think Tennessee's good enough to overcome even some struggles early by him. But I think that's what you have to look at is how quickly can he kind of grasp things? Tennessee with a great defensive line, losing a the best running back in the SEC last year in Samson. How quickly can they replace that? I don't have a lot of confidence. I mean, Will talked about this in another segment. In Tennessee's wide receivers, I still just think that it's too much for Syracuse to overcome. I'm not trying to give my prediction, 5 minutes early here, but I that's what I'm looking at is the quarterback play on both sides. If Angeli can kind of out-duel Aguilar, then maybe they have a better chance, but I still think Tennessee has too much around them. But I am interested to see, again, against a Power 4 opponent, what Aguilar looks like in week one.
Well, another interesting coaching matchup between Josh Heupel and Fran Brown, just offense mind, defensive mind. Who do you give the edge to there?
I think I have to give the edge to Heupel, just fully off of, he's already proven that he can do it consistently. And I mean, Tia said this too. I'm also very high on Fran Brown, but they won 10 games last year and they lose so much production from last year's team. I just think they're kind of bound to take a step back. And to be fair, I think the same thing of Tennessee. Not to kind of put a whole damper on this game when I'm saying both teams are going to be worse this year, but back to your original question. I mean, coaching wise, I have to give it to Heupel. He's done it everywhere he's gone. The offenses have been great and there's no reason to believe that he can't at least scheme up a solid offense, even if personnel-wise it won't be as good as it has been in the past form.
TJ, if Syracuse wins, what went right?
I think Aguilar melted down. I think that's where, I hate to put it on one really simple thing, but I think Tennessee's, I talked about this with FSU and Bama. How many guys on Syracuse's roster would go in and start at Tennessee, immediately? I'm not going to pretend to be the all, the albatross of Syracuse football and know exactly what their, starting 22 is going into this game. But I mean, just look at the way they recruit and look at the differences. I do think as much as Heupel gets praised as an offensive coach, which he's really good there, Tennessee's defense is still really good. And they had to win a lot of games because of their defense last year. You think back to the Florida game, you think back to the Oklahoma game, they won games because they kept teams under 20 points. And I think that is going to be the case here too. I think their defense will shine against the Syracuse team that they're a lot more talented than, but if Aguilar puts the ball in harm's way, if he's not able to adjust, if Fran's able to scheme some things up, that is, I think, Syracuse's best path to a win in this one.
All right, well, flip question for you. You get the easier one because Tennessee is predicted to win in this game. But if Tennessee does, in fact, win, what went right and what growth did we see out of this offense week one?
I mean, what went right, I think they held Syracuse to, 13. Because of how new that offense is, how good their defense is. And let's just say, total random guess, let's say this is a 28-13 game, which is right about where that spread would be at. 28 points is not that bad for an offense that is so new and that, frankly, none of us are that excited about. That would imply to me that Aguilar kept the ball out of harm's way, that the offense was clicking, whether it be a good running attack, which I do think could be better than expected, or a decent passing game with those elite receivers. So Tennessee definitely has a path to win. I do like them to win, but I have a hard time getting there with that number at 14 because I think it's going to be such a low-scoring game with both teams breaking in new quarterbacks, new schemes. Oh, sorry, not new schemes, but just a bunch of new players on both their offenses.
All right, so give me your prediction.
Tennessee, 23-14, 24-14, something like that. Just a little slower game. I definitely have it going under. And I have a hard time picking Tennessee to beat a solid Power 4 team by two scores at this point until I see it happen.
TJ, what say you?
Yeah, I'll go slightly higher scoring at 30-21, but Tennessee wins this. I just have a little more confidence in the total makeup of their roster. I do think Aguilar, I don't think he melts down like that, so the best case for Syracuse probably doesn't happen, but I think Syracuse is up against a tough one in this one. So give me Tennessee to win.
All right, guys. I do want to say we've got a couple comments over here. Mr. Jones says, what if Joey Aguilar thrives in Heupel's offense? Seems like everyone's counting him out, but with an elite defense and consistent run game, he won't have to carry the team, just manage the games. He also added, Vols have run for 2,500 yards each of Heupel's four seasons.
Yeah, I mean, that running back room with Hassan Bishop and Peyton Lewis, I am higher on it than I think a lot of people are because those names aren't necessarily, wow, I can't wait to watch that guy run the football. So I do think their running game could be a little bit better. And what if Aguilar's great? Then Tennessee will be great and that offense will click. But Aguilar just hasn't shown that he can do it because he had not a great completion rate, bad interceptions in the Sun Belt. I just don't see him magically, even in a good system with Heupel, just magically getting rid of all of those problems. Could it improve? Totally. I have a total faith in Heupel and that Tennessee staff, but that guy is still in there, and I'm just afraid that at certain points we're going to see some bad mistakes that might put them in some really bad spots in these harder games.
Yeah. All right. I agree with both of you guys. I think the Tennessee beats Syracuse, but I don't think that it's necessarily a precursor of like great things to come for Tennessee this season. But I do think that Heupel's an incredible offensive coach. And so that does give me hope for them because I think he can develop well. Well, this has been a peek inside SEC football. We previewed the very biggest games of the weekend, but there is tons of SEC games scattered all throughout the weekend. I, for one, am so excited. We will all be hanging out on social media throughout the weekend. I am sure we'll tell everybody where they can find you and argue with you.
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at WThomasSports. I'm definitely excited to try and get some people to yell at me. I said some bad things about LSU in this episode, so it shouldn't be that hard.
All right, TJ, everybody loves to argue with you. If they haven't found your troll account, please tell them where they can find you.
Yeah, it's just my name, TJ underscore Pittenger, and I will do my best to put some bait out there and then never respond to anybody. So you're welcome.
All right, and I'm Allie underscore P. In between chasing five children, I will argue with lots of you. Half of you tell me I'm a sunshine pumper. Half of you tell me I'm too negative. So I'm guessing that means I fall somewhere right in the middle. Thanks for tuning in. Make sure you are subscribed and subscribe to A Peek Inside SEC Football. We will see you guys next week. It is here. You have survived. You have several days of football coming your way. Enjoy it.